Harper Audio presents Adventures in a TV Nation by Michael Moore and Kathleen Glynn, read by Michael Moore. Who let this show on the air? It's true that the best things that happen to you happen when you least expect them, or in our case, when you actively try to avoid them. In 1989, a low-budget documentary we made, Roger and Me, a film about General Motors and what it did to our hometown of Flint, Michigan, became a big success. It was the last thing we expected. The film was shot over a 3-year period in whatever spare time we had with what little money we had. Our intent was to finish it, hop in a van, and drive around the country showing it in union halls, community centers, and church groups. We silkscreened some t-shirts and took them to sell at our first film festival so we could afford the trip back home. Instead, our film was bought by Warner Brothers, eventually shown in nearly 2,000 theaters, and broke the box office record for a narrative documentary film. After Roger and Me, the head of Warner Brothers Television asked to meet with us about ideas for creating a television series. We thought, TV? Who wants to do TV? We wanted to make movies. The meeting never took place. Our next feature-length film was a long time coming. I had written Canadian Bacon in the summer of 1991, but Warner's passed on it. So did every other studio. The screenplay for Canadian Bacon involved a farcical takeoff on the Gulf War. It was deemed too political by most of the executives who read it. I made numerous trips to L.A., pitching the movie in one unsuccessful meeting after another. It was on one of those visits to Hollywood in November of 1992 when one morning I found myself in my hotel room raiding the minibar and watching The Price is Right. The phone rang with a call from a network executive at NBC.
"We just want to tell you that we really liked Roger and Me, and we are wondering if you had any ideas for a television show."
Sure, I replied, not having a single TV idea in my head.
Great! We'd like to set up a meeting with you and our president of entertainment, Warren Littlefield. How does this afternoon look?"
Let me check. I fumbled around trying to find the remote control to turn down the volume on the TV set.
This afternoon, looks open. Good. We'll see you at 4.
Panic set in. We had no ideas for a TV show, and even if we did, we didn't want to do one. We wanted to make Canadian Bacon. On the half-hour drive to Burbank that afternoon, I cranked up the heavy metal, and Kathleen and I talked on the car phone about, trying to think up something for this meeting. It was then, with the car radio blasting out Metallica, that we came up with the idea of TV Nation. It would be a humorous magazine show, but with one distinct difference. It would have a point of view. It would stand for something, instead of pretending to play it down the middle of the road, as most other news magazine shows do. It would side with working people and against corporations. Who would advertise on such a show? No one, we thought. We figured that the meeting should be over in a matter of minutes. I was relieved knowing that no network, let alone NBC, would ever pick up TV Nation. Upon arriving at NBC, I was told that the meeting was in the commissary. A good sign, I thought. Very low key. I was greeted by my agent and an executive from Columbia TriStar Television, Eric Tannenbaum. Eric offered to join me and go upstairs and present TriStar as the studio for the potential TV show. After all the formalities, Eric asked me, "By the way, what is your idea for a TV show?" I pitched him the idea about TV Nation.
"I thought you were going to come up with a blue-collar northern exposure," my agent lamented. "They're not going to like this idea."
"I like it," Tannenbaum countered. "It's funny and it's different."
I was concerned that Tannenbaum liked this concept a bit too much. I didn't want to do a TV show. But I rationalized my worries away by saying, what does Tannenbaum know? He doesn't run a network. He's just a nice guy with a good sense of humor from a studio. Not to worry. The three of us went upstairs to see the NBC president. In the room was Warren Littlefield and various vice presidents of development and programming. After polite introductions, they sat down and I began to describe the show.
It'd be a cross between, say, 60 Minutes and Fidel Castro on Laughing Gas, I threw out at them.
The suit sat up in their chairs, interested.
The show would, like, it'd be like the most liberal thing on TV. In fact, it would go beyond liberals, because liberals are a bunch of wimps, and they haven't gotten us anything. This show would go boldly where no one has gone before. All smiles in the room. Tell us more. Well, the correspondents would look like shit. I mean, they'd look as if they were either on their way to Betty Ford or had just spent a year working at Taco Bell, or both. In other words, one of the junior executives chimed in, a real show, by real people, for real people. There were excited executive smiles all around the room. What was happening here? Didn't they realize that we didn't want to be on television? That these ideas would all spell suicide for the network? Obviously not. I had no choice but to go for the kill. See, each week, we'll pick one of our advertisers and go after them like a barracuda. They won't know what hit them. Then we'll go after organized religion, starting with the Catholics. I've got one idea where I'll go to confession in 20 different churches and confess the same exact sin to see who gives out the harshest penances. We'll run the results and call it a consumer's guide to the confessional. There was a pause of silence in the room, and then everyone burst out laughing. That's the funniest thing I've ever heard, Littlefield exclaimed through his belly laugh. Genius! No, I pleaded. Think of all the hate mail you'll get from your Catholic viewers, including me. As a former altar boy and seminarian, I'd hate you to run this offensive piece. Mike, Littlefield said, Catholics are the ones with the sense of humor. You know that. They'll love this. Everyone around the room nodded in agreement. Thank yous were exchanged. Tannenbaum patted me on the back for, quote, hitting a home run, and I drove back to West Hollywood to my hotel, wondering what had gone wrong. By the time I arrived at the hotel, NBC had already called and left a message. It read, Pilot has green light. Budget around 1 mil. Call agent. Kathleen and I were stunned. 2 years of trying to get a movie made with no luck, and in less than 15 minutes in Burbank, we get $1 million to produce a primetime TV show that we don't even want to do. This is a very strange business indeed. In January 1994, we began making the TV Nation pilot for NBC. We didn't have any experience or a clue as to what we were doing. We called up some friends, Joanne Doroshow, co-producer of a documentary on the U.S. invasion of Panama, which had won an Academy Award, Pam Yates and Paco de Onis. Pam had won an Academy Award. Jim Zarneski, a funny guy who had worked on a Saturday morning TV show called Pee-wee's Playhouse. That made him the most qualified of the bunch. They would all be our segment producers. We hired Jerry Kupfer to be our supervising producer. He had some experience on Showtime at the Apollo and had set up some public radio stations on Indian reservations. To cast the show's correspondents, we conducted the normal casting sessions one does for a new show. Except this show wasn't normal. There had never been anything like TV Nation on the air before. Was it news? Was it entertainment? Even NBC didn't know and ended up putting us in their drama division. TV Nation was to be a combination of documentary and humor, and the journalists we interviewed weren't very funny. The comedians we auditioned, for the most part, knew little about what was going on in the world. This part of putting the show together was very difficult. In the end, we convinced Meryl Marco, one of the key creators of The Letterman Show, filmmaker Rusty Cundiff, who had just made a hilarious satire called Fear of a Black Hat, and actress-comedian Janine Garofalo to be our on-air reporters. We decided that each hour program, 45 actual minutes without the commercials, would have 5 8-minute stories, plus introductions by myself. The criteria we set was that each segment had to show the viewer something he or she had never seen before on TV, aggressively take on the powers that be, whoever they may be, and gave us some sort of comic relief as we considered the horror of what we were actually watching. It didn't take long to come up with the 6 segments we would shoot, hoping that 5 of them would turn out to be okay. The original 6 stories revolved around these ideas. Number 1, let's fire everyone on the show and move it to Mexico to take advantage of NAFTA. Number 2, is it easier for a convicted white murderer to get a taxi in New York City than an award-winning black actor? Number 3, let's buy a home in newly reopened Love Canal. Number 4, Appleton, Minnesota. They built a prison to revitalize their economy, but they can't find any prisoners. Number 5, I travel to the former USSR to find the missile they had pointed at my hometown during the Cold War. And number six, my idea about going to confession. We decided to go with the first five stories. I had second thoughts about violating the sacrament of confession, so I asked Janine to do the piece. As a recovering Catholic, she was more than willing. But when the segment was finished, I was confident I would burn in eternal hell if this piece ever ran, so I spiked it for the time being. Two other short pieces were killed by the network. One was called Lie of the Week. We were going to use a voice-activated lie detector, attach it to a TV, and then run a test on what the news tells us each night. Either the machine didn't work that well, or the network news division had some explaining to do because, well, when we tested this, the machine registered a lie in nearly every report on the nightly news. Needless to say, the plug was pulled on this segment. In between each segment, it was decided that we would conduct an actual poll of the American public, but not with the same dull, unrevealing questions that are asked in your typical Gallup poll. We hired a man named Robin Widgery from Flint, who had his own polling firm, and we had him call a sample of 204 people from around the country and ask them questions which would yield results like 67% of Perot voters believe that Forrest Gump was a documentary, or 51% of all Republicans believe that if dolphins were really smart, they'd find a way out of those nets. We also decided that, instead of having a studio audience or a fake set, we would shoot the introduction of all segments, including the opening and closing of the show, with me hanging out in Times Square. Finally, we wanted a cool title sequence which would open each show. We hired graphic designer Chris Harvey to come up with the images and the music group Tom and Andy to write the TV Nation theme song. We told them the song should be a cross between, say, Metallica and the Leave It to Beaver theme song. We completed the pilot in 3 months and then brought it out to NBC in Los Angeles. On the day it was screened, all the executives of the network sat in the room and laughed nonstop at all five segments. As the lights went up, one suit asked another, "Can we sell any advertising on this thing?" They decided to test the show with a focus group. These instant critics gave TV Nation the highest marks. NBC then decided to test it with an entire town, the town of Scranton, Pennsylvania. It scored the highest of all pilots that season. Unfortunately, according to NBC, there was no room in the fall schedule for our show. The prospects of an audience ever seeing TV Nation seemed bleak. So I went back to trying to get Canadian bacon made, but with a new tool to convince Hollywood, the tape of TV Nation. We showed the pilot to John Candy and Alan Alda, and they loved it. We showed them the script of Canadian Bacon, and they agreed to star in it. With their names attached to the project, we were immediately able to raise the funds to make the movie, which we did in the fall and early winter of 1993. Then an odd, lucky thing happened. You don't usually think of the person who runs the BBC in Great Britain as being an avid devourer of TV Guide. But Michael Jackson, no relation to the King of Pop, was the head of BBC Two, and he was reading TV Guide one day and noticed a one-sentence gossip item which said that Michael Moore had made a pilot for NBC. Jackson, who had seen Roger and Me, was intrigued. Wondering what this pilot could be about, he called NBC and asked them to send him a tape. After viewing it, he called TriStar and NBC and told them the BBC would like to buy the show. You could see the light bulbs going off in the network craniums out in L.A. If the British like it, it must be good. On the night after Christmas, 1993, we received a phone call from Eric Tannenbaum of TriStar Television. "What do you think about doing a summer season of TV Nation on NBC?" he asked. "They want to do it, and the BBC wants to do it. They'll share the cost." We were stunned. We thought the show would never see the light of day. We immediately accepted the offer. A month later, we were setting up our production office in New York. Virtually everyone who had worked on the pilot came back to be a part of the show. On the first day of work, we gathered everyone together and told them what we wanted to accomplish. "All of us need to behave as if we'll never work on television again. Because if we do this show right, nobody will ever want us. It will be too dangerous to have us around." "Oh, you worked on that show? Piss off! You lost all your sponsors." "That's what they'll say. So if you want to go work on 2020 or Live with Regis and Kathy Lee after the show is over, we suggest that you leave now and apply to work on those shows, because they will not want you after this show airs. This is not a place to build a resume. We are here to produce a show that will be brutally honest and devastatingly funny. We will not make any friends in Congress or corporate America. We will not lie to the viewer. This is a rare chance for all of us, who usually do not have a voice in the media, to have our voices heard. For 1 hour each week, we're going to give the average person like ourselves the chance to watch a show that is clearly on their side. They'll know it and they'll love us for it, but we'll never work in television again. That was it. My little pick-me-up pep talk, you know, to get things going right on the first day. The results that followed are chronicled in this recording. Thanks to the hard work and take-no-prisoners attitude of the staff, we were able to make a bit of television history. And all of this because we never really wanted to do a TV show. Go figure.